Accession number 30,001, Peter Est, Reel 28. Now, while you were at Halton, one thing is you ran the Royal Aeronautical Society, or that part of it, you know, the local...
That's right, the Halton branch.
Yeah, and you got some interesting people. I don't know whether you remember anything about that.
Yes.
They're such famous people. Somewhere.
Yes. I used to set up talks. We used to meet once a month. And the boys used to enjoy attending the Aeronautical Society meetings. And on a number of occasions, I was able to get some people to give some interesting talks. And of course, it, not only did it attract the Royal Aeronautical Society members of the Halton organisation, people used to come in from Mars. All the station commander and all the other officers, they knew these sort of people coming. They all used to pile in.
So who did you get? Did you remember?
So, well, I had Barnes Wallace. I had Al Deere, a well-known fighter ace, good friend of mine. Couple of firms test pilots. Gosh, now, can't remember their names.
No. Okay, okay. Now, anything else about your time at Halton? You seem to have enjoyed it there.
Yes. When I knew I was going to Halton in the first place, I thought, gosh, this is a dreaded end. But in fact, it turned out a very much more pleasant posting than I'd anticipated.
What did you like about it particularly?
Well, it was a good social life. I've had a wonderful mess, which is still there, called Halton House. And it was one of the old residences of well-known firm, family up in that part of the world.
Doesn't matter too much. What was it like then?
Oh, it was a lovely, lovely officer's mess. And we had a nice married quarter there. And the wing commander admin for the station took a shine to my wife. And we had a brand new house there, but he came up with another house in the village, which a group captain had been in. He's a doctor, and he was moving out. And this was coming up. And he said, came up to bed. He said, would you like it? She said, my goodness, yes. Got a picture of it on that wall there. And so we moved into this house and we spent the rest of our time. It was a lovely stream running right past the place, and it was an old style house, but very good. It had a lot of character. And we stayed there until my time was up.
And when was your time up? I think 64, wasn't it? And then you seem to go to Joint Warfare Establishment, Old Sarum.
Number four. That's been number five. So, Old Church Air Ministry School. Yes, in May of 64, I went to the Joint Warfare Establishment at Old Sarum.
What was that post? What were your duties?
I was the staff officer of the Commandant. And being a joint service organisation, the staff were more or less a third of each service, Navy, Army, Air Force. And when I went there, the commandant, and once again, that was rotated between the services. The commandant was an Air Vice Marshal.
Who was that? Ginger Weir?
Yeah.
What was he like?
Oh, he was a hell of a good chap. Yeah. But it was unfortunate that I didn't have very long with him because he was due to be posted. I can't remember how long it was I had with him, but Then it was the Navy's turn to take over. And they didn't send an admiral in, they sent a Royal Marines general in. Of course, the Royal Marines part of the Navy. So, and his name was...
Billy Barton.
That's it, yeah.
And how did you get on with him?
Oh, I got on all right with him. But I preferred the Air Marshal. No, he was okay. But...
what would you do? What was your job? You were their staff officer, personal staff officer.
Yes, yeah. If he wanted various things looked at, investigated, or followed up, I'd do it on his behalf.
So?
An interesting job.
In what way?
Well, it meant dealing with all three services to start with. And we had lectures, and we used to run courses for NATO officers, not only British officers, but occasionally we'd have officers from some of the, there was some, no Russians came in, there were some Poles and some, all various nations used to come and do courses at our place, Norwegians. Not only the British element of the services, of course we did have courses for them as well. So
what were the courses like, or would you not know particularly?
Well, they were trying to teach the students the necessity of having a joint arrangement between the services, whichever country it was. If you've got or other, your Air Force, Army, Navy, whatever, you had to learn to work together and operate as a team rather than individuals.
And you became a believer in that, obviously. But it's common sense, isn't it?
Oh, yes, yes. There were various courses. They were only short, some of them were only a week or 10 days. Some of them were 2 weeks, maybe three, but they weren't certainly not very long courses.
Now, while you were there, you saw the testing, the TSR-2, I think.
You
didn't fly it or anything, but what was your awareness of the TSR-2?
Well, I tell you...
I don't mean what you read in the newspapers, I mean what you saw.
No. Old Sarum, where it was quite close to Boscombe Down. And the TSR-2 was being tested from Boscombe Down. And as we were so close, we used to see the TSR-2 flying over. It was used to come over Old Sarum area. And I never saw it on the ground. I've seen it on the ground since at some of the museums. But it always looked, for that day, that sort of part of the... it was, what, 64 to 66... looked extremely good. We didn't see it being fully tested, we just saw it flying around. And it was never developed. I think there was a Labour government in, and they were cutting back, as always. And the chap who was doing the testing was Chapman Rowley Beaumont. Because it was built up in Lancashire somewhere. Anyway, it never developed and came into service at all. Pity, really, because I think it would have been very good.
Anything else about your time at Old Sarum? There's not much in the book, it's about a paragraph. I just wonder whether there's anything else you recall, or was it just sort of fairly mundane staff duties?
Yes. We had quite a lot of social occasions because every course that came in was given a welcoming evening in the mess, about half past six until about 8 o'clock. Only a short session, but to get to know them, and we would go as the staff officer's accommodant. I went to all of those with my wife. She used to come along with me, and we used to meet them and talk to them. And try to make them welcome to the atmosphere of the mess and the atmosphere of the unit. And every course had a welcoming invitation to at the officers' mess. So it was just a start off to get them meeting and talking together.
So it's a pleasant social life.
Yes, yeah.
Anything else about your time there?
Well, there was the deputy commandant was an air commodore. We became very friendly with him, Betty and I, and with his, he and his wife. And he became an air marshal later. It begins H. Christ, what was his name?
Doesn't say it here.
No.
Never mind. Perhaps come back to it. I think we'll move on from there to your next one. Is a NATO staff appointment.
Oh, yes, the military agency for standardisation.
Now, what is that? Military agency, that's mass, but I mean...
A military agency for standardisation. And their office was in London. And I used to... We didn't get into uniform to go to the office. It was all in civilian clothes, rather like being at the Air Ministry.
This is in London, but whereabouts in London? Where was the office?
It was... just off. I'll tell you.
It doesn't matter. London will do. Now, what were you doing? What exactly were you doing there? You were advisor to the chairman. What was your role?
Well, we had a naval section, an air section, and an army section. And I was in the air section, of course. And with me, I had a colonel, an American colonel. Canadian flight lieutenant, a French colonel, all of the Air Force, the various Air Forces. I think that was about it.
What were you working out on standardizing?
I was responsible for four working parties, I think it was. There was on the engines side, the technical side was one. Another one was air control. What was the other one? I've forgotten now what these working parties were.
Fuel, yeah, as you mentioned.
Yes, fuels and lubricants. Yes, that was an important one.
So take that one, if you remember that one. What would you do?
Well, we had to ensure that all the NATO nations used the same fuel so that whenever aircraft were interchanging between nations, they knew they could pick up the sort of fuel that was required. And lubricants as well. The various oils that were used had to be standardised. And we used to have working party meetings in various nations. We weren't always held at our place. Sometimes they'd say, all right, well, the next one will be in Paris, or the next one will be in Holland, or wherever. And with one in Rome. So we're getting around, attending these various working party meetings, and we used to run them. So although they were held in other countries, we used to run them for them.
And did you enjoy this work? Oh, you're yes. headquartered at Belgrave Square.
That's it, Belgrave Square.
I've just noticed it in the book.
Yeah.
Just as I asked earlier, yeah. just put that in. Anything about what you remember of it? Sort of any events that happened? You started in September '66.
Yes. Well, I went around Europe quite a lot. We used to fly out and stay. The meetings used to last for about 3 or 4 days. Used to stay over there, of course, and then we'd come back and get back to our London office and be report writing, writing up on the details of what took place. That was quite extensive.
And anything else about it? I mean, that's enough. I mean, it's quite important work, obviously, Hans. It's important
yes,
work.
Yes, it was. Standardisation of anything to do with military aviation, really.
Was there any resistance to it? I mean, were some nations particularly difficult or awkward?
No. Don't think so. No, I think most people appreciated the fact that it was an important angle.
So they were willing to compromise?
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes, a lot of them, they were willing to learn because a lot of them were learning new things which they hadn't appreciated before.
So what next? Anything else about your time with MASS?
No, I don't think so. Who's that bloke out there? No, I don't think so. I just look to see what. No, I can't think of anything.
Okay, yeah, so next prompt thing is after 2 years, that'll be 68. When about in 68?
Oh, yes, in August 68, then I went to 5 Brigade, 5 Infantry Brigade at Tidworth.
Now, this is a special brigade, isn't it?
Yes. It was 5 Infantry Brigade when I joined them, and then a bit later on, they changed their name to 5 Air Portable Brigade. I was the first RAF officer to be attached to the army in this way.
Were there when? That would be
August 68.
Now, what exactly? You were the brigade air support officer. And
yes.
You were the first. What
yes.
is that? So this is quite important. What was your role?
To liaise with the army on all their exercises, and I used to, if they wanted any information regarding air support. Not only fighters, but all types of air support, transport aircraft, helicopters, and every type of support, air support, that the RAF could offer them. And this used to be practiced on various exercises. And I had my own Land Rover and used to go out on the exercises myself. I did a number of on Salisbury Plain.
What were they like? What would you do on those exercises on Salisbury?
Well, we were living under canvas. Salisbury Plain, of course, was very close to Tidworth. And the brigade commander was a chap named Bramall, and he was a brigadier.
Now, that's, yes, I mean, Lord Bramall later on.
Yes.
boss of the War Machine at one time. Now, how did you get on with him?
Very well.
What was he like at that time?
Oh, he was an excellent chap. I had an office in their headquarters. Although I officially on the RAF side came under headquarters 38 group, which was at Odeon. And I used to have to go down there quite frequently to check in with the AOC, the Air Vice Marshal, who was a chap I knew quite well to start with. His name was Martin, and he was an Australian. Hell of a good chap. Did well. He was in the Pathfinder Force.
So how did you deal with Brigadier Brammel?
He wanted to know if they were going on an exercise and they wanted what sort of air support I would recommend for them, and so on, depending on the type of exercise that it was. And I used to tell him what I thought. And he said, well, can you organise that for me? I said, yes. So I used to get in touch with 38 group and say, this is what we want for an exercise, so and so and so and so. It's going to last for 4 days or whatever. And then they would send transport aircraft dropping supplies, or helicopters dropping troops and supplies, moving the troops around the battle zone or the war area. Then if to make it realistic, have fighter support doing the fighters coming in doing practice strafing attacks on the troops, so it gave them a bit of everything, and that was very good. And I went on a number of exercises. There was a big exercise area up in Norfolk. Can't think of the name of that now either.
I should know, but it's gone out of my head as well. So you went there as well, same sort of thing?
Yes, yes.
Now you also seem to have gone on overseas exercise, in fact a series of exercise, well, a 3-week series of exercise.
Yes. Well,
did you do that more than once?
Yes, I did. I'll tell you what happened. NATO were getting hold of this system of the army having Air Force wing commanders attached to them as air advisors, and arranging air support for them on various exercises. And NATO thought that it would be a good idea if they did something similar, because they hadn't done that before. And I was the first one selected to go with NATO. And I went on 3 NATO exercises.
So you didn't go with 5 Air Force Brigade, you just went
yes,
an air support officer?
Yes, yeah.
Now, what do you remember about these exercises, these NATO exercises, and your role? Well, the role would presumably be much the same.
Oh, yes, similar.
What do you remember of the exercises? There's quite a fuss made in the book about, quite rightly so, from the looks of it, that it was quite tough, physically.
Yes, I mean, I used to live under canvas. And of course, I was in khaki. I wasn't in blue. I wore a blue beret and had my RAF ranks on my shoulder, but I was in khaki, and I used to sleep under canvas. And
so where were these exercises?
Well, the NATO exercises, I went on 3 of them. One was in Denmark.
What was that like?
Oh, that was very good. And weather-wise, it was good. And, of course, you see, within these NATO organisations, they had about 4 or 5 different nations contributing towards the force. It was called the NATO
seems to be called ACE.
ACE.
I've no idea what ACE stands for.
Yeah, Allied Commander Europe. When we went on these exercises, I went on this one in Denmark, and I flew over there in an RAF transport aircraft and took my Land Rover with me and my 2 airmen who were supporting me, and all the radios and things that they had to have, make contact with anyone. Then another one I did was...
Did it go well?
Yes, yes, that one went
language
well.
Language difficulties? Or I wonder whether you had any language difficulties in a multinational force. Did everyone speak English?
Well, no, they couldn't all speak English, but a lot of them could. It went well.
So what other ones do you remember for these exercises? That's Denmark.
Oh, then I was at Greek Thrace, along that part of Greece between Greece and Turkey, that south of Bulgaria, and we were right up north there, right quite close to the Bulgarian border, and we were fairly high, if I remember rightly, about 3,000 or 4,000 feet above sea level up there, and I had my tent and it's all organised, and the commander of this NATO force was an Italian general, and he was quite a character. He was not very tall. He was almost as wide as he was tall, and it was a parachutist, and I was responsible to him, and he didn't know much about the use of air support, so I was putting him wise most of the time.
But he was accepting of what you had to tell him.
Oh yes.
He didn't reject it.
Yes, yes.
So that's Northern Greece.
And that was a good exercise. I and so, of course, the air support I got from those exercises wasn't always RAF. It was contributed by other nations. But I still controlled it. Another exercise I did was in the Arctic. And that was 500 miles north of the Arctic Circle, right up at the top of Norway.
Now, how tough was that physically?
It was in February, and I hate the cold weather anyway, and it was just about as cold as you could get. And I was under canvas, but I had on my camp bed special deer skins put on the bed as better insulation against the cold, and it was all right, managed, but we had our winter clothing on, of course, and it was very, very, very cold, but the exercise went all right. I had air support as usual coming in.
It was successful. Now, another role you seem to have had is escorting some Russians and Warsaw Pact generals, and others, during an exercise on the Salisbury Plain. Do you remember that? You were acting as escort, certainly to some Russians and
yes.
Bulgarian generals, those sort of things.
Yes, I do, because what's the royal chap's name? Prince Michael. Prince Michael Ken. He was a major in the Ministry of Defence at that time, and he had about six varying officers. I can't remember the nationalities now, but I'm one Nigerian admiral. I think they've only got a canoe in them. Nigerian Navy. Do we have any Russians?
It says you Soviet here. It says you had, yeah.
Yes,
book.
Yes, we did. We had people from that part of the world. Poland and all around there.
Soviet bloc.
Yeah. There were about six of them all together, and Prince Michael brought them down, and they all came down in cars to that's the place where I was.
Doesn't matter, really.
No. Anyway. And we there was an exercise on Salisbury Plain. I laid on a helicopter to pick us up and take us to the exercise area. And these chaps were all having a look round, seeing what was going on.
Did you have to steer them away from secret things, or was it not that?
No, there was nothing much secret there, really. Not on Salisbury Plain, anyway. So...